This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's a very nasally JJ Zacharyson. I'm the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 214 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. It's the off-season, which means fewer people are listening to this show. I see the download numbers. I know that in January, fewer people care about fantasy football, but a lot of you are 365 days a year players, and that's why this podcast doesn't stop throughout the off-season. And I like to think that people listening to the show in January, February, and March, I like to think that those people are gaining an edge over their competition. But with this being more than a summer and in-season show, I've got to branch out in order to make enough hashtag content. It's tough to create these shows, and it's harder to do so when things are kind of dead. So because of that, I got to branch out and take more of a dynasty angle with some of these shows. If you've never played in a dynasty league, I did do an intro-type podcast episode last offseason with Ryan McDowell on the game format. If you want to go listen to that, it's episode 111. But dynasty formats are obviously different beasts than redraft formats. You're not just drafting guys for one season, so you're looking at their age, their potential future production, their contract situations, their teammates' contract situations. There's a lot more that goes into it. Even though I focus a lot of my analyst energy on redraft formats, I do play in a handful of dynasty leagues. And I have for years. And it's not as though the two formats are completely different. You're still analyzing quarterbacks, wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs, and you're still playing fantasy football. But as usual with this podcast, you don't have to take the advice to heart. You don't have to do absolutely everything that I say. I just want you guys to enjoy and learn. That's it. So if you disagree with me, that's a good thing. My wife disagrees with me all the time, and she hasn't left me yet. So maybe you won't either. But today, my plan is to walk through 9 players that I'd be looking to buy in dynasty leagues right now. Essentially, these are players who have lower dynasty average draft positions than they should, or they're players who I'm a little bit higher on versus consensus. Before I reveal this list of 9, I wanted to remind all of you 13 off-season listeners to go to FanDuel.com and play this weekend's big game slate. There's plenty of contest variations, so you should be able to find one that suits what you're looking for. So go to FanDuel.com and join. I was looking at Dynasty League Football's average draft position data, and I noticed that Jameis Winston is listed at QB 23. Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers, and Drew Brees are all listed ahead of Winston in January's ADP report. Which, by the way, I'm not being paid to say this, but DynastyLeagueFootball.com is a great dynasty resource for anyone interested in the game type. But Jameis Winston's ADP doesn't make sense to me. I guess some people are afraid of him losing his job, or maybe his off-the-field issues, but from strictly an age, production, and situation standpoint, there seems to be no better value in Dynasty right now at the quarterback position. I mean, let's just look at the facts. Winston's only 25 years old. He turned 25 earlier this month. That's younger than Jimmy Garoppolo and Carson Wentz. Winston's team is coming off a season where he and Ryan Fitzpatrick combined to score the second most fantasy points at the quarterback position. Even if you want to look strictly at Winston himself, he finishes a top 15 weekly quarterback in 6 of his 9 nice starts. He's got a great number one receiver in Mike Evans. He's got an up-and-coming pass-catching tight end in OJ Howard. He's got another up-and-coming wide receiver in Chris Godwin. And his new coach is someone who loves the vertical passing attack. The reasons you wouldn't want Winston is because of his off-the-field issues. And maybe you're against rostering players with off-the-field issues, which is totally fine. But I guess it's that which leads into the fear that he's going to be suspended again. But he's not exactly priced that way. He's going to enter 2019 as a fringe QB1 in redraft leagues. And at 25 years old, he's priced in Dynasty as a low-end QB2. So I think given his situation, he's definitely worth a buy. One thing that will be consistent throughout today's show is my tendency to buy injured players. You can generally get them at a discount because most people have this "what have you done for me lately" attitude. And injured players have done absolutely nothing for you lately. The first injured player that I want to talk through that I think you should buy is Devontae Freeman. I generally try and build my running back depth through rookie drafts since they can make an impact right away. Actually, last offseason I did a podcast on valuing rookie picks, which is episode 113. And in that podcast and in the study that I did, you can see and hear the numbers and how backs give you much more of an immediate return than other positions. This isn't groundbreaking though. We know that running backs step into starting roles as rookies all the time. Basically, what I'm saying is I don't often go out and buy running backs. There are actually only 2 running backs on today's list of 9. But one of them is someone who was injured last year and is entering a really interesting situation in 2019, and that's Devontae Freeman. Freeman didn't do a whole lot in 2018 because his season ended after he played just 2 games. He played in week 1 and week 5. But Freeman should still have a couple of years left of pretty good production in an offense that's just littered with talent. And most importantly, there's a good chance that he's without Tevin Coleman moving forward because Coleman's a free agent. So that leaves the backfield to Freeman and Ito Smith, unless they draft another back this year, which is totally possible. But the competition for touches is going to more than likely be weaker, which is a big deal for a running back who's gotten by on efficiency as opposed to crazy, crazy volume. Freeman's only hit a 54% rushing share once in his career, and he's carried the ball more than 230 times just once. And he hasn't done it since 2015. I mean, we've seen this backfield without Tevin Coleman before. Since 2015, which is when Tevin Coleman entered the league, we've got an 8-game sample of Devontae Freeman without Tevin Coleman. In those games, he's carried the ball 5 more times per contest, and he's more than doubled his rushing touchdown total. Now again, I don't expect Tevin Coleman to disappear and no one to step up. I'm hoping the person who steps up is Ito Smith for personal reasons because I've got a lot of Ito Smith in my dynasty leagues. But I think it's fair to assume the competition, at least in 2019, won't be as difficult for Devontae Freeman. And with a new offensive coordinator in the picture, there's some upside there. So if you want a slight discount on Freeman given his injury, and if you need a couple of years of fringe RB1 production, I think he's a great target right now. The other higher-end running back that I think you can go look to buy this offseason is Dalvin Cook. When I'm looking to buy and sell players, I'm thinking about how a player performed in his most recent season, and then I'm also evaluating his situation to see if that situation was really good or really bad. I'm looking and saying to myself, will this situation get any worse over the next 2 or 3 years? And then I'm going from there. And even if you push aside the injury issues for Dalvin Cook, I think there's an argument to be made that what he went through in 2018 or the situation that he was in this past year should only get better. And that's for a few reasons. First, the injury. Dalvin Cook wasn't healthy throughout 2018, and that made him a not-so-reliable fantasy asset. But there's also Minnesota's offensive game plan in general. Only 3 teams were more pass-heavy than Minnesota this past year. The Vikings had a 1.7 pass-to-rush attempt ratio, and that was still a top-6 number in neutral game scripts at 1.62. During Mike Zimmer's 5 years in Minnesota, it was by far the most pass-heavy team that he had. That's not to say that Mike Zimmer is their offensive play caller or coordinator, but as a head coach, he's at least dictating philosophy in some way. The Vikings were also not very strong on the offensive line. Football Outsiders adjusted line yards had them 23rd this year, and they were one of the worst teams in short yardage situations this season. And to be honest, I think Dalvin Cook is just good at football. Our sample size isn't massive, but he's outperformed his relevant teammates, so we're mostly talking Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray here, but he's outperformed them in success rate over the last 2 years. And he's a very capable pass catcher. Targets are a function of a player being good, because you won't be targeted if you're not good. I'm a believer that targets is a talent metric. In 2018, even though he was banged up, more than half of Cook's games resulted in 4+ targets. And in 3 of his 11 games, he had 7 or more targets. There's nothing wrong with that. And Latavius Murray is also a free agent. I think there's a chance that he's back in Minnesota, but if he's not, Cook should have a little bit more volume upside. I think a lot of Cook's value will come down to how his manager is just feeling about him. He's still a fringe RB1 in Dynasty right now, but some may be lower on him given everything that I just talked about. But I do think the only direction for him to go is up. Probably my favorite wide receiver buy this offseason is Marvin Jones. You guys all know that I love me some Kenny Golladay, but Jones is in a really good buy spot right now. He fits the mold of having an injury discount, and it's not like he was some trash fantasy asset when he was healthy this past year. Through week 10, which is when he was injured, he was averaging about 13 PPR points per game, which gave him high-end wide receiver 3 numbers. But that was also with Golden Tate for a majority of the time. Tate peaced out after the week 5 game against Green Bay, and in 4 games without Golden Tate, Marvin Jones captured a target share of 21%. Before that, his target share is about 17%. And not only that, but that 21% includes the Bears game where Marvin Jones got hurt in the 3rd quarter. So that number should actually be higher. So given the current roster construction, Jones is going to be a starting wideout for the Lions. I mean, regardless of what they do this offseason, he's probably going to start opposite of Kenny Golladay. He'll be 29 years old in March, which means that he should have a couple of years left of decent production in Detroit. And we've already seen Marvin Jones hit a pretty decent ceiling. In 2017, he scored 9 times on over 1,100 receiving yards. I think if you're in win-now mode and just need a solid wide receiver 3 who could very easily finish as a wide receiver 2, Marvin Jones is your guy. He's a nice, cheapish target to go after. Chris Godwin is too cheap. According to DLF's ADP data from January, he's being drafted behind Tyler Boyd and Tyler Lockett. And I'd be drafting him ahead of both of those players with ease. Nothing against the name Tyler, I just like Chris Godwin more. I know non-analysts are probably sick of hearing analysts talk about Chris Godwin, though. People like myself type him up a bit as a late-round target this past offseason, and he didn't do a whole lot. I mean, he was losing snaps to Adam Humphries. That's not great. But Godwin had a pretty good college production profile that included a 78th percentile breakout age. The dude is still only 22 years old. He'll be 23 in February. And check out his offensive situation. Again, the Bucs have a strong enough quarterback, they've got Mike Evans to take some pressure off, and they've got a young tight end in O.J. Howard. And this is in an offense that should be friendly for fantasy purposes with Bruce Arians taking over. And a lot of Godwin's competition could just be gone next year. Adam Humphries is a free agent, and Humphries stole a lot of looks out of the slot from Godwin in 2018. And then there's DeSean Jackson, who's been very open about not wanting to play in Tampa Bay. We'll see if Bruce Arians can change that, but D-Jax may be gone too. That should leave a nice target share open for Godwin. And Godwin can play all over the field. And it's not like Godwin's never shown anything. In 2018 alone, he had 3 100-plus-yard games and he scored 7 times. His jump from year 1 to year 2 is exactly what you want to see. The problem is, a lot of people who have Godwin rostered really like his potential too. So him being a buy candidate is more dependent on how that league manager feels more than most players on this list. This past season, Marquez Valdes-Scantling finished 3rd on the Packers in targets with 73. We had that group of wideouts with him, Jamon Moore, and Equanimeous St. Brown go to the Packers in the 2018 draft, and MVS is looking like the clear winner of that group. He almost doubled their combined target total. That's definitely a great sign, but I also love that over 46% of his snaps came from the slot. That's according to Pro Football Focus. That was the 2nd highest mark on the team, and the highest mark was obviously Randall Cobb, who played about 88% of his snaps from the slot. But here's the thing, Cobb's a free agent. Maybe the Packers bring him back for another season, but they also might not. I mean, there's a reason there's a picture of Aaron Rodgers and Randall Cobb hugging and literally crying before their Week 17 game. They knew it might have been their last game together. And if Cobb is gone, that's going to open up some opportunity in Green Bay. Now, that obviously means opportunity in the slot, but it's opportunity everywhere. It's another player not in the way of someone like MVS. I think taking a shot now on MVS and even maybe Equanimeous St. Brown makes a lot of sense as a result. Not only are the Packers seeing an offensive change with Matt LaFleur as head coach, but you're associating what could be starting wide receivers with one of the best quarterbacks in the game. And right now, MVS can be had at a wide receiver 5 price tag, and St. Brown is virtually free. I think they're both logical dart throws, and I do think that MVS is a higher ceiling given how they utilized him all over the field in 2018. Another super cheap player to target this offseason is Albert Wilson. I'm not expecting the world for Wilson, but let's not forget that before he went down with his season-ending injury, he had about a 17% target share in the Dolphins' offense, and he scored 4 times in just 7 games played. You've also got a lack of competition there for targets. Kenny Stills should still be around, but Devontae Parker is expected to be released, and there's not a whole lot of depth after that. Wilson's really competing with an aged Danny Amendola, Kenny Stills, and Mike Gesicki, who's unproven. But the other side of this is that Albert Wilson is actually pretty good. You guys know that I'm big into college production and how it translates to the NFL. And Albert Wilson was a freak in college. He actually had a 98th percentile dominator rating according to playerprofiler.com. And again, he's super cheap. He's not going to cost you anything to obtain in a trade. He might even be a throw-in. But I think he's a worthwhile asset to have if things hit in Miami. And even if they don't hit in Miami, he'll be a starting wide receiver who should walk into 70-plus targets next year. Once upon a time, I wasn't a Will Fuller fan because everyone else was a Will Fuller fan. That's not really true. I always liked Will Fuller the player, but I hated the way that people viewed his touchdown scoring ability. Because there's more to Will Fuller than just that. And that's what excites me about him in Dynasty. He's currently listed at wide receiver 31 in startups, behind Christian Kirk and right ahead of Sammy Watkins. But what more does he have to do aside from stay healthy? And if health is the issue, why the hell would you want Sammy Watkins over Will Fuller? Let's just pretend Will Fuller didn't score touchdowns. Because it's true, he's overachieved in the touchdown column over the last 2 years. He doesn't even have 1,000 receiving yards, but he scored 11 times. That's way above the league's average. But Fuller also saw his target share hit nearly 20% in games played this year, and he had 100 or more receiving yards in 3 of 7 contests. I mean, Will Fuller's prorated end-of-season yardage total was about 1,150 yards. That's a top 20 number across the league. And that's without even talking about touchdowns. That's without talking about the fact that he's a big play waiting to happen and he has tons of upside, given he's only 25 years old and he entered the league with a really complete college production profile. Now, Kiki Kuti is going to dig into that target share number as we move forward, but Houston also threw the 6th fewest pass attempts in the league this past year. With a healthier offense, that number could and should rise. So if Fuller takes a slight hit in target share, it could be combated with more volume in that offense overall. Essentially, I think there's a group of people who just view Will Fuller incorrectly. He's not some one-trick pony who's bound to see touchdown regression. He had a nice target share when he was healthy this year, and he was a really good prospect coming out of Notre Dame. And in an offense that's more than likely going to improve given Deshaun Watson's still young, I think he's a strong trade target. The last player I want to talk about today is sort of a post-hype target, and it's Ricky Seals-Jones. Like I said earlier, one question to always ask yourself with players in their situations is, could this get any worse, or could this get any better? And in RSJ's case this season, I think that we can all agree that it might end up being the worst situation he'll ever have to deal with throughout his career. But look, there's still some good that came out of 2018 for RSJ. He finished the year with about a 12% target share in 15 games played, and while that's not amazing, it was still a top 15 share at the tight end position. That's at least something. Buying him right now is really a combination of a few things, though. First, his cost is really cheap. I mean, like, really, really cheap. He's tight end 30 according to DLF's ADP, going far behind some unproven guys like Adam Shaheen, Demetrius Harris, and Hayden Hurst. He's easily the youngest guy who's being drafted that late who's seen at least a decent amount of work in the NFL. And don't forget, RSJ was a wide receiver in college. And he was actually recruited by Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury when Kingsbury was offensive coordinator at Texas A&M in 2012. There's just a lot of upside there. You've got an offense that at least has a chance to be dynamic with Kingsbury's air raid approach. And then on top of that, there's not a ton of depth at pass catcher for the future in Arizona. We know that Larry Fitzgerald will be around for at least another year, but after he's gone, it's going to be Christian Kirk, David Johnson, and probably someone not on the roster who's fighting for serious volume with RSJ. So why the hell not? Why not trade for RSJ? It's strictly an upside move for a pass-catching tight end who used to be a wide receiver who's now playing in a brand new type of offense. Given his price tag and age, RSJ is definitely someone that you want to stash. Now, just to reiterate, I don't expect everyone to agree with everything I just said on today's show, but I at least like using this platform to not just give picks, but to explain why I feel the way that I do about particular players. You can hate on the picks, but hopefully you hate the process a lot less. That's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And I'm also on Twitter, at LateRoundQB. I do a mailbag show each Friday, so you can send me any mailbag questions to that account or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you later in the week.